Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, July 2nd, 2004, 10 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. It's time now, of course, for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, on our program, we'll be talking with Stephen Sugart, Jr., about long-term storage strategies for your home. During the second half of the show, I will welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go online, go to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, then click on Send a Message. I'll give that information out again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geekspeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, geeks, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, John Tracy. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Morning, Lyle.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Before we start about saving your personal files and media at home, what's up in the world of technology? Miles?
This is via an Associated Press article. The U.S. Justice Department has refused a request for info from their foreign lobbyist database, basically citing that the database would crash if a query were made on it.
Who made this assessment?
Thomas J. McIntyre, chief of the Justice Department's Office for Information Requests, said that implementing such a request risks a crash that cannot be fixed and would result in a major loss of data, which would be devastating.
Miles, you know a little bit about data retrieval. Should systems crash when databases are accessed for selects?
Not usually. And in fact, from Bob Williams of the Center for Public Integrity on Tuesday, he said, "This was a new one on us. We weren't aware there were databases that could be destroyed just by copying them." He said the group expects to appeal the Justice Department's decision.
Wow. Well, thanks for that information on public information, Miles. John, I'm going to go to you, sir.
I've got a "It's Hard to Be at the Top" story.
Tell me about it.
Apple has made the iPod, and the iPad's been the most successful MP3 player selling for the last 3 years in a row. So we've got two stories here. One is Dell puts a $100 bounty on iPods. The PC maker said they will give you $100. They'll give you a $100 rebate towards their 15-gigabyte digital jukebox if you send in a Apple computer iPod.
Are you tempted, John? You've got an old Apple iPod.
I've got one of the original iPods.
How big is it?
It's 5 gigabyte. Mm-hmm. It's the original first version, and I have no reason to upgrade it. I'm perfectly happy with it. 5 gigabytes of music is more than I can listen to in any given period of time, so I'm perfectly happy with it. I have no reason to upgrade.
Okay, how much do they hold on the high end?
The high end of the iPods?
Yeah.
They hold up to 40 gigabytes, really? And that's about $500 for those. Dell is hoping that people will switch because they offer theirs for about $100 less than Apple's 15 gigabyte. And they say theirs will run up to 20 hours, where Apple's will run up to 8.
What's the second attack on the iPods?
Sony is coming out with a 20-gigabyte music player, which targets the iPod, the middle iPod. There's a 15, a 20, and a 40-gigabyte iPod. They've got the network Walkman and the Vio Pocket. The Vio Pocket is a 40-gigabyte. MP3 player, and the network Walkman is a 20 gigabyte. And they're also one thing about the Vio Pocket is it's also got a 2-inch LCD screen on it, so you can use it as a media player. So you can view photographs, you can view movies, things like that. So that's
very nice.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool departure from the standard MP3 player.
Personally, it's wonderful from a consumer perspective to have some competition in the iPod realm. I mean, there are a lot of players out there, but it is nice to see some people, some companies, big companies, stepping up and really attacking, if you will, the product.
Well, it's nice to see things progressing because competition always fosters better products.
Sure.
And I just want to say that the Network Walkman, not only does it have 20 gigabytes, it also comes with a 256 megabyte flash card. And you can download pictures from a Sony camera directly to the player. So if you want to view them on the 2.2
inch. Oh, while you're on the move?
Yeah.
You don't need the computer?
Exactly.
Nice.
So if you have a camera and you have an MP3 player, which a lot of us do, you run a room in your camera, you can download everything to your player.
That's really nice. Yeah. And you can confirm.
You just bought
the
new Sony camera.
Inch.
Yeah, I did.
The 5-megapixel digital camera.
The W1, yeah.
Too bad Sony doesn't offer a $100 rebate towards that.
Sean, now that your beautiful voice is gracing the airwaves, please tell us the news items.
Well, speaking of Sony, they have actually just opened yesterday a concept store in Silicon Valley to attract and teach consumers about emerging technologies and products. The store is located at the Stanford Shopping Center. So maybe if you're down that way, check it out. Dell is planning to offer $220,000 in additional grants to fund computer recycling programs in the United States and Canada. So they plan to disperse 22 grants of $10,000 each to help applicants like states and local governments, universities, nonprofit groups. They've already awarded $120,000 for 12 events, and they've already collected more than 800 tons of computer equipment.
Wow. So 800 tons.
So if you're interested in getting some of this grant money from Dell, go to their website.
Okay. Thank you for that information.
Before July 30th.
Yes. Before July 30th. 1 month.
Miles, programmer and student in American literature, to you.
The First Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers half of New England, has ruled that ISPs can read email without informing or getting consent from their customers.
That's a state issue, right?
No, actually, this is a federal.
Oh, my gosh.
This is federal court. And what it was, what happened was an ISP was sifting through emails and taking out, for example, information through a program called Procmail. Emails going to customers from Amazon.com.
And why are they doing that? Probably
for marketing reasons. What the decision has found was that the Wiretap Act does not cover interception of communications where the communications are only being stored on a hard drive and not retransmitted to another location.
Oh. So can it then be viewed by the ISP?
Oh, yes.
Can they use that data?
Oh, yes.
Interesting. All right, it's time for pretty good privacy. There's programs out that you can use to encrypt your email, and no one can read it except the recipient.
But it might take them 10, 20 years to decrypt it.
Well, it depends on how big a key you're using. If you use a 4,096-bit key, you might as well put a supercomputer on every single email you ever send for the next 100 years.
Right.
So we'll be talking about pretty good privacy encrypting your email next week on GeekSpeak. Miles, thanks for that story.
And encryption's a good reason to get a faster computer.
That's true.
One of the few reasons, really.
That's true. Sean?
Microsoft is putting the final touches on their Service Pack 2. We were all hoping that it would be out by now. And then they said that it would be out by July 21st. And then they said it would happen this summer. Well, now they are promising, they're guaranteeing that it will ship within the next 2 months.
What will?
Oh, that's Service Pack 2. Okay. See, you forgot already.
Forgot already, the whole discussion.
Of course, a lot of people aren't happy about it because it's such a headache to test for and to implement.
Aren't there some key updates that are rolled into Service Pack 2? I mean, like security updates?
Yeah, serious ones, a browser one that's in there.
I think you can get pretty much most of them.
Now, there was something we mentioned a couple weeks ago, we should be remembering we're the ones that mentioned it, that is only in the Service Pack 2.
Yeah.
Well, if they keep an eye on it.
They are
so
updating.
Make sure you run out right now.
We've been talking about this like for a month,
yeah,
that it's about to be out.
So this version is going to be called... Oh, they're also updating the Windows Update feature to version 5.0. So I think what they're doing now is if you stop an update halfway through, you don't have to restart it again.
Oh,
later.
Nice.
Yeah,
that'll be good.
They caught up with that one.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much, Sean.
Yeah.
John? Owner and operator of FeltonGames.com, I might add. Sir?
In galactic news today, Hubble Space Telescope may have discovered as many as 100 new planets orbiting stars in our galaxy. This is significant because it almost doubles the amount of planets that we know about. What they did is they took 7 days and scanned the dome. If you look at our galaxy from the side, there's like a dome in the middle. They scanned stars in that dome, and they found 100 new planets confirmed. They're looking at them. They estimate that probably 10 to 30% of them will have some sort of an atmosphere. I'm sorry, 10 to 20% of the planets will have some sort of atmosphere. And they say this is really significant because it it more than doubles the amount of planets we know about, and it also makes us wonder about how many other stars out there have planets.
Right.
Pretty much, the majority of the stars we've looked at have planets.
It also makes us a little less significant.
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, as the saying goes, if we discover life or we discover that there is no life out there, either one is significant.
Yeah, that's true. That kind of happened a couple hundred years ago.
And Lyle, you're special either way.
Thanks,
we
Lyle.
Became less significant when we realized that we
John,
were orbiting other things.
These other planets, I'm assuming, are giants, meaning that they, because they influence the star enough that you can see the wobble of the star.
Right.
From orbit.
It doesn't say specifically, but my guess is yes, because that's the way they discover it, is a star dims and then comes back up in a regular pattern, which means that there's something orbiting in front of it.
Right. All right. Well, thank you very much for that little story. And we're going to go over to Miles Elam. Sir?
The Department of Homeland Security, in a move that I haven't seen recently, from their computer emergency readiness team, have recommended that people use browsers other than Microsoft Corporation's Internet Explorer.
Who said this?
The Department of Homeland Security's U.S. Computer Emergency Readiness Team.
You mean Microsoft doesn't own them yet?
But what they were also saying was they were discouraging use of the web server software, and if you do use Internet Explorer, that you disable JavaScript and ActiveX. Now, the caveat to that is that you have to have ActiveX and JavaScript enabled in order to use windowsupdate.microsoft.com.
So the best thing to do is leave your Windows browser alone, get a free browser that works really well, and then only use your browser, your Windows Internet Explorer browser, to update your computer from Microsoft.
That's the idea.
So the good solution
for...
Or
that's the recommendation anyway.
The solution that you would recommend, Miles, for a browser for a person that has a Windows box?
You have your choice of Firefox, Mozilla, Opera...
Okay, let's go ahead with Mozilla.org. Go there, and you can get a browser there for free that works very nicely. Thank you very much, Miles, for that. Sean Cleveland, let me give you your title as well. Technical Marketing Communications Manager for Transmeta. Sean, your last news item for the day.
Is that what I do?
Well, sometimes when you're not here.
Okay, so I got two news items. You told me I could do one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, we could talk about Intel's new 3264-bit chips. Well, that's the story. So the other story is Fahrenheit 9/11. Has sparked quite a debate online. If anybody hasn't heard about this, I haven't heard about it on the radio much, so people might find this interesting. Michael Moore at one point said, "I don't agree with copyright laws, and I don't have a problem with people downloading the movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, and sharing it, as long as they're not trying to make a profit off my labor." He says, "I make these movies and books and TV shows because I want things to change, and so the more people who get to see them, the better." So a bunch of people got together and started a website called morewatch.com, copied his movie based off of a handheld camcorder, and posted it for people to download. So, of course, more
handheld
supporters.
Handheld camcorder, which is a federal crime.
Of course.
So, yeah, this is really big. Of course, there are a large majority of people who don't want people to see the movie,
right,
or they just want to, you know, task more word at his word. So Lionsgate Films, though, I guess, is going to be taking
issue with people distributing their film without them getting paid for it. Thank you, Sean, for that. John,
by the way, if you haven't seen the movie, it's really good. It's really worth seeing. All right.
The views expressed on Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KSB. John,
Apple is delaying their new iMac. There's lots of rumors floating around about Apple's latest iMac. They've had their last one for several years. It's definitely time for them to update.
And that's the one that looks like a lamp, the white
base.
And the big,
yeah, yes,
okay.
With a flat panel display. So rumors are that they're going to keep the same body but put a G5 inside of it, which would be great. Others are saying, no, they're going to go for a total redesign. Nobody knows for sure. These are all rumors.
Apple's so good with those secrets.
Yes. But what is known is that they are not... they've stopped taking orders for the current iMac models. Mm-hmm. And they hope to have the new iMac available by the time the supply of current iMac dries up. So that means if you're a store out there, you're not going to be getting any new iMacs for all of July, August, and part of September.
And the iMacs are really nice machines.
What's the I stand for?
It's, internet connected.
Personal? I don't
know. Yeah, same thing that, iPod, iTunes.
I thought it might be Intel or something.
So okay. I looked into why the delay is, and I found out that a supplier in the critical path was unable to perform.
Ah.
So there you go. That clears it all up.
Happens to me every week.
That said, chipmaker IBM has had trouble meeting demand for the faster G5 processors in the past, and they still are. So
it could be that.
That's a very likely.
This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. We are talking today about personal storage. With digital photography and home video editing, you might be experiencing the dilemma of what to do with these precious digital files. How do you store your photos and videos so that your grandchildren can see them? Today, we address just this issue. After reading a great article on long-term storage strategy, which is available via our website, geekspeak.org, you can go there to read the article on a different site. I decided to ask the author to come on and give us a breakdown of the issues around long-term storage. Our guest, Stephen Sugart Jr., is an analyst with Current Analysis and contributing editor for Network Computing Magazine. Stephen, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, Lyle. How are you doing today?
Quite well. Thank you for being on to talk a little bit about the issues around storing stuff. First thing I want to talk to you quickly address is that it's not just about the media that you store things on, but about the actual format that that the data is stored with. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, absolutely, Lyle. I mean, when you look at the various file formats that are out there, let's take just for instance pictures. Back in the early 90s, I will show my geek side here when I was still running my Amiga. We had a file format at that time for digital pictures, and I had access to a very, very early digital camera at the time. And unfortunately, because I failed to update the format and, of course, move it over to more modern systems, those images aren't available to me anymore.
You mean you still have them on some floppies or something, but you can't read them because the format is just non-supported?
Exactly, exactly. Now, I no doubt will get mail from someone who has a conversion program now, but the idea is that while there may be a way to do it sometimes, the longer you wait, the worse it gets. And this applies to all your files, not just your picture files and your movies. This applies to your, let's say, your documents, your spreadsheets, if you're into PowerPoint and doing that kind of thing. Microsoft updates their formats regularly.
Yeah.
And while they do a fairly good job about maintaining backwards compatibility, there will no doubt be a point where bringing in your old file will become difficult.
Right.
So updating your format of your archive data every couple of years has really become important.
And how do you recommend doing that for, like, Word docs or something? How do you recommend that?
Well, the simplest way to do it is, if you're running Microsoft Word and you have some old files, just load them up again.
Like Word 95 or something like that?
Yeah, if you've got Word 95 or something, load up the latest version of Word and open it.
And then save them.
And then save them back out again. And usually, Microsoft Word will say, okay, this is in an older format. You might be doing things that, that the older format can't read. Do you want to update the format? Do you want to do it that way? And you just tell it yes. And you make sure that it's saved in the latest format for Microsoft Word.
Okay.
And then you're safe.
You're safe
for another 3 years.
Right.
The other way you could do it, although I find this to be less useful, would be to save it to an ASCII text format, which is going to be readable something
for
close to forever.
30 years, yeah.
What about an RTF format? Rich text.
RTF is a good format. Microsoft support for it is poor. So if you're stuck on Windows and you're stuck on using Word, I've found that it doesn't handle the formatting quite properly in all cases.
One of the reasons I bring that up is because your suggestion to do it every 3 years to open it and save it with the latest version of Word means you have to go out and buy the latest version of Word, which is often
fairly
expensive.
Absolutely.
So what I was thinking of is a lot of the smaller Word processing programs support RTF.
Sure, absolutely. Or if you're using something like OpenOffice.org, even if you're using a freeware or open source system, you're going to want to go out and get the latest copies every now and again.
Right.
And still update your files.
I mean, I think right now, if you took the first file, like when my wife was going to UCSC as a student, she was editing Word documents through a terminal, and bolding things with weird tags and doing special cases and saving. Those files are not readable by anything really right now. And so that's a perfect example. We're talking a 10-year span. Files are just not accessible anymore. And that means you have to keep on updating. What's the safest way to keep your text files, your Word documents?
Oh, you mean as far as in terms of the storage they're on?
Yeah.
Well, actually, the safest way is a number of ways. The truth is that when you're looking at your data, a lot of your data, especially if it's creative data, where you've gone and written something or done something creative and it's maybe hard to get back to that place where you were when you wrote it, having multiple copies is the best way. Now,
you said something to me on the phone yesterday or the day before, so that one of the best ways to store those documents is to print them.
Yeah, actually, I find that to be a great, what I call ultimate backup, where you take your documents, you print them out, and, you know, you either run them down to the safety deposit box, if they're really that important, or you keep them in a file cabinet. Because, frankly, optical-to-text conversion on a scanner has come a long way. And while it would be cumbersome and unpleasant to do, you don't actually lose your stuff.
Right.
And I think that's the important thing. Now, that would be what I call the last line of defense kind of data retrieval. Now, in between there, you've got a number of options. You can go DVD, CD. There's a number of proprietary formats like iOmega ZIP and iOmega Rev formats.
Now, isn't that format kind of dangerous in that it's not as widely supported, therefore its life expectancy is really based upon the company's decision?
Yes, absolutely. And the Rev format is the same. Now, the company claims, like iOmega's new Rev Drive, which is essentially a reworking of the old Jazz, they claim a 30-year shelf life. Now, if iOmega doesn't make mechanisms for 30 years, it's not going to help you any.
Right. Especially, they do slowly degrade. So, you know, we might have in 30 years, if the company's gone out of business in 10, we might have, on the planet, 1,000 of these drives that work. And then getting that data off those things is going to be really expensive and hard.
And if you think that's not an actual problem that applies to today, we've been trying to get some old data off some SyQuest drives. I don't know if anyone out there remembers SyQuest.
Sure.
Those drives are maybe 10 years old when they were at their peak, and finding a working SyQuest drive has been problematic.
In fact, this will be a whole business on retrieving data. And if you don't want to be spending money in 10 years on trying to retrieve your photos of your wedding and stuff, you've got to be dealing with it all the time. So, okay. We talked about the text files a little bit, and that image file formats are not as good. But let's talk about like TIFF and JPEG, the most common image file formats right now. What do you think the duration of their usefulness and existence will be?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, JPEG has gone through a number of legal wranglings over the years, and I don't think that's a huge issue for the home user. But it's certainly an issue for the web operator. I do think that TIFF as a format will remain in high end right now because it's a lossless format, and JPEG is not. I think JPEG is probably good for a number of years yet. I don't see the standard fading at all. Software out there I see is still supporting it. The only thing that could change that is if the legal situation around JPEG changes and then companies are no longer allowed to read or write the format without buying a license.
And if that legal issue happens, that's the time to act and make sure you transform your file.
Absolutely. That's the time to go immediately and move all of your JPEGs over to another file format.
Now, of course, don't do this. I mean, there is a whole thing about the length of existence of your computer. If your personal computer is going to work for, it's going to work for the next 4 months, you've got some time to not worry about it. But don't let it lag very long, because eventually the file format's going to be bad. Now, we're not saying that JPEG's going anywhere or TIFF is going anywhere. That's probably the totally safest. If you had to pick a file format, both those are stable right now.
Absolutely.
Let's talk, though, about the issues of storing large amounts of data, because as people take digital photographs, like I went to a wedding last month with a friend of mine and went ahead and took pictures, and I think I racked up about 2 gigs of photos. No, that's not true. It was a gig of photos. So a gigabyte of one day, one wedding, that friend wants to store those, indefinitely. They want to be able to pass them off to their grandkids and stuff. So what do they do? What's a good storage medium?
Okay, well, first, the optimal storage medium that has the best life and is readily available right now is DVD, either rewritable or record once DVD media.
Okay, there's two different types of DVD right now. There's DVD-R and DVD+R. What one do you recommend?
I don't have any specific recommendations for either format. What I will say is when you buy a drive to burn these discs, buy one that's capable of doing both.
And which one is more supported right now? I mean, if I want to I mean, okay, so we're talking for backup. Once you buy the drive, whatever, either format doesn't matter as long as your drive works, because you can always recopy and recopy and that kind of thing. But what about the sharing it with somebody else? It's kind of an issue too. I mean, I know there's two different issues here. One is the storage of it, and one is the kind of sharing of these files.
Well, the issues between DVD readers having difficulty reading DVD plus R or reading DVD minus R,
mm-hmm.
if you have a modern reader, anything you've purchased in the last year, maybe year and a half,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to see a problem.
So we saw some unstable stuff in the beginning, but now it's kind of getting stable.
Yeah, in the beginning, between the two camps, some lines were drawn, and some people deliberately produced DVD-ROM drives that would not read the other format.
Mm-hmm. So there's a fight going on.
Right, but the truth of the matter is that the market pushed them both into... I don't want to say accepting the other format, but at least being compatible with it.
Right. Okay. Now, let's say we do store these files on DVDs. You got to buy a DVD burner. You got to get DVD media. How long is the DVD media going to last? And is that the critical point in storage?
No. Well, first let's address the first question. How long does DVD media last?
Yeah.
That's entirely dependent on how good a DVD media you buy.
Who rates them?
Nobody. That's the thing. All you can go for is by the manufacturer. Every DVD media uses a dye. And this is true of CD media also, in order to burn. And what happens is depending on the control of temperature and humidity, during the manufacturing process, and of course cleanliness and any number of other factors, depends on the quality of the media you get back out. If you're going up on bargains websites and finding, oh wow, I can get a spindle of 100 for $25 of DVD media,
don't.
You're getting what you pay for. While I'm not normally a huge advocate of going name brand on things, when it comes to DVD media and CD media, buy name brand, especially if you're going to use it for archiving. Now, if you're just using it to flip a disc of MP3s over to a friend of yours, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're using it for archive, you need to be careful and buy the best. You want to look at Sony. You want to look at Tao Yudin. You want to look at Verbatim. Now, everybody's got a horror story about every one of these brands. It's like picking a car. Everybody will say, well, I had some of those and they were bad. Well, that's true.
Well, Stephen, the difference between the brands is the dye used, right?
Is the dye in the manufacturing process.
What about brands like, TDK, Maxell?
I would be comfortable with TDK and Maxell. I've used them both myself.
Okay. So pretty much anything that's not an off-brand that you've never
heard. Yeah, if you don't recognize the brand, you probably don't want to buy it. Manufacturers tell us that properly stored CD and DVD media is good for about 100 years.
What is properly stored?
Well, properly stored means that it's put in a low humidity environment at an even temperature, 65 to 70 degrees, and kept that way at all times.
And dark, no light.
And no light, because UV is very bad for the dye.
But we're seeing some stories about people that store it that way, and some discs are starting to fail after 3 years.
That's absolutely true.
Right.
And I really think that this has to do with the quality of the media they bought initially,
mm-hmm.
with the quality of the burn that they did. And, the same thing is true with your DVD burners.
All right.
If you buy a cheap DVD burner, you're going to get a cheap burn.
So burning at different speeds, does that really matter?
To my
at the higher speeds?
Understanding, the only things that matters at burning speed is when you're burning a true audio CD meant to be played in an audio CD player. Some audio CD players are picky about
mm-hmm.
the format.
Mm-hmm. So you want to burn slower.
You want to go slow there. I mean, if you want to be safe, slower is always safer.
So it used to be the early days of CDRs, the laser wouldn't be quite as strong at the higher speeds. We're talking 4X, 10,
yeah,
versus 2X,
yeah,
versus 1X. But that's not an issue anymore, right?
I don't see it as being an issue, and none of the information I've ever gotten from any of the media manufacturers or drive manufacturers have suggested that that's a problem now.
Yeah.
Today on GeekSpeak, we're talking with Stephen Sugart about long-term storage strategies. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet access, including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL, now with nationwide access. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life, and I'm talking fast to get in shape for this week's program. You see, every week on our program, we bring you 3 to 4 stories on some theme, blah, 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 you know the drill. But this week, we throw that slow-paced, thoughtful nonsense to the wind and bring you 20, yes, 20 stories in 60 minutes. Frankly, we wanted to do 30 stories in 60 minutes, but at this point, we don't know if we can pull that off. I guarantee you at least 20. To see how many we speed through, listen this week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on KUSP.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. Today on Geek Speak, we're talking about long-term storage strategies for the home, how to store your precious data for the long haul, with analyst Stephen Sugart. Please join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Use the Internet. Visit geekspeak.org. Click on The Geeks. And then click on Send a Message. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The Geeks, again, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, John Tracy. The phone numbers to join the conversation with our guest, Stephen Sugart. 476-2800 in the 831 area code, or 1-800-655-5877 in California. And, of course, all over the world, you can visit geekspeak.org using the Internet. Click on The Geeks and click on Send a Message. We're back now with Stephen Sugart. Stephen, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Lyle.
So DVDs is what you recommend. There's a new medium of DVDs, and that's double-density DVDs. And they're not exactly out yet, but they kind of are. And can you tell us a little bit about that? Should we wait on buying a DVD burner?
Yeah, I would definitely wait. Dual-layer burners are just coming out. And a matter of fact, the media has just been announced in the last week, which means you've been able to buy the burners for maybe 3 or 4 weeks. You haven't been able to buy any media to use on them, which is problematic. I would wait for that price point to come down. It can and will come down for dual-layer media. Dual-layer essentially means that you'll be doubling the amount of space you can keep on a DVD.
Which brings the total up to?
Around a little bit over 8 gigs.
8 gigs? That's substantial. I like it.
Yeah, it is.
No, it feels to me, it's like right now I've got a CD burner and a DVD burner. I've got a two-speed, so I've had it for a while. And I think of the CDs that I burn as more stable than the DVDs. Is that just a fictitious thing in my mind?
Yeah, I would have to say that it is. The DVDs have, although I have to say that I had that feeling at first, too. Whenever you go to a new format, it's something you don't necessarily trust. But the truth of the matter is I haven't had any more data degradation on DVD than I've had on CD. And every occasion where I have had disk failure, I can point to mishandling.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can point to cheap media.
Now, when you, let's say you take a whole bunch of photographs, 2 gigs of photographs, and you burn them to a DVD, do you make 2 copies? Do you burn 2 copies of the same disk?
Absolutely, absolutely. What I do is I try to make my backup plans as kind of a twice-yearly cleanup thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I make regular backups of my current photographs out to DVD RW, and I keep saving it out there because I keep rewriting that media. But then once or twice a year, I go through and I say, okay, it's time to archive these things off. I'll burn them to a single burn disk, and then I'll burn another copy of that disk, checking the files both times to make sure that everything's good. And I look at it like I would spring cleaning or fall cleaning. It's just something you have to do. It's cumbersome. It's something that's not a lot of fun. It takes a couple hours. But ultimately, when your hard drive crashes, or you have some other kind of disaster, you know, perhaps with a can of soda. There you go. You've got your backups.
Stephen, what about DVD RAM? I hear libraries are turning to DVD RAM for their storage.
I hadn't heard that. DVD RAM is an older standard. It was originally used by Apple before there was really a DVD-R available. The nice thing about DVD-RAM, and I can understand the reason why they would use it, is DVD-RAM is enclosed in a case. It comes in a carrier.
Right.
So your hands never actually touch the disk, which will increase the life of the media. And for a library where a lot of people will handle it, it's a good choice.
Is it still available as a media, though?
It's
kind of gone the way of beta.
Yeah,
now.
You can still see it at Fry's.
Yeah. Matter of fact, Panasonic makes the drives, and I believe they're the primary manufacturer of both the drives and the media.
Now, that's kind of concerning. I mean, one company doing it doesn't seem like a good solution.
It's fully supported by the DVD forum.
Yeah, it is, and I believe that while they're the primary, I believe Pioneer also still makes the stuff.
Good.
But I believe that Panasonic is the primary manufacturer.
Now, if you look at long-term storage.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's been around the longest is tape backup,
mm-hmm.
And that's the one that's still used most places in corporations and stuff. Can you address tape backup? Is it a good solution for the home?
I would say that today, for the home environment, no.
Why is that?
Because currently, when we talk about corporate backup, we're talking about a media that has a life of around 30 or 40 years. We're talking about professional-grade drives. We're also talking about drives that cost, just for the bare drive, $5,000.
Wow.
And the media isn't cheap either.
Yeah, exactly. They're $100, $150 a cartridge. Well, when we look at the media we have available for us at home, choices would be like DAP-72, Traven, maybe AIT-1 if we were going to really push it, or...
These are all tape solutions?
Yeah, these are all tape drive formats. AIT is by Sony. Certance, which is Seagate's former drive division, renamed and spun out, makes DAP-72 and Traven.
And you don't like these for the home because why? I mean, there seems to be a lot of solutions, a lot of people doing development for it.
The thing is that most of the development, like the formats like VXA1 and AIT1, are actually just legacy formats from the data center. They're not really doing development on it. They're just moving it down the tree. Now, DAT-72 and Traven are developed for the small business and for the home. But the truth of the matter is that these are what we call linear formats. When you write to a tape, your data is kept at some point on the tape, and you have to rewind and fast forward to go through them. They're
mm-hmm.
very slow. They're very cumbersome to update. And frankly, I find that tape mechanisms, while the tapes, I think, are pretty tough, tape mechanisms are sensitive to dirt and dust, and they're more expensive than CD or DVD drives.
Right. Okay, so the retrieval, that's actually a second thing. I mean, you mentioned that tapes take a long time to get the data back off. DVDs are relatively simple, but that's like a secondary issue of backing up, and that more goes into the line of storage, is that you want to access your stuff relatively quickly.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about, oh, gee, I corrupted a file, and I've got a paper due tomorrow, and I need to get another copy of it, all of a sudden you're waiting 20 minutes. I tell you what, the longer the backup and restore operation takes,
mm-hmm.
the less likely you are to do it. It's just human nature.
Right. Now, the tape solutions, the one thing that they have mm-hmm. over DVDs is the size of the tape. I mean, though the media is a little more expensive, we're talking 40-gig tapes are kind of the norm. That's pretty big compared to 4.7 gigs, which you can do on a DVD, and then soon to be about 8 gigs on the double density. Isn't that an issue, or is that the price just doesn't come close still?
I don't see the price coming close. I mean, truthfully, even the most avid digital photographer,
mm-hmm.
now he may take gigs and gigs and gigs of photography, but his problem is going to rapidly become, what did I take and where is it, as opposed to, how do I store it?
Right. That's a good point. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Tronox. With the Geeks this morning are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. Today on Geek Speak, we're talking with Stephen Sugart, Jr. about long-term storage strategies for the home. If you'd like to join the conversations, you're welcome to do so. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Right now, from Boulder Creek, Duana?
Yes,
can you speak up, please?
Okay, I have a flash memory card that I'm having trouble retrieving photos from. The only thing I've tried is at a commercial place that I usually take to get prints.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be worthwhile to get some kind of special software and a memory card reader or something like that?
Well, do you really like the photographs that you have?
Yeah, they're important photos. I haven't reviewed them yet, but they were of a special event.
Well, and does your camera take photos in JPEG format?
Yes.
Okay. I ran into this problem every once in a while. You lose files. I personally wrote a little Perl script to retrieve JPEGs off of lost media like that, which works relatively well. But there are consumer line products like that. Stephen or John or Sean, do you, either of you know a good product for retrieving data?
I'm sorry, no. Normally, my experience with flash media has been that if you've taken it to multiple machines and you've been unable to retrieve it, it's usually a damage to the card. That's been my experience, but that's by no means all-inclusive.
Dwayne, can you hear that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, since you're in Boulder Creek, you're kind of in my neck of the woods. I'd be willing to work on this with you. It probably wouldn't take me that long to see if the disk is, if we can get the files off of it.
Yeah, I've experienced pulling data off hard drives, but with very expensive software and working with companies.
Yeah.
Very different.
So, Dwayne, since you're in Boulder Creek and we live near each other to some degree, why don't you go ahead and give me an email at some point, lyle@geekspeak.org.
Okay.
And we'll hook up and I'll try to help you out on this thing. Thank you for the call, Dwayne.
Okay.
Personalized service from the geeks.
We've got an email. It doesn't really say who it's from. How does your guest recommend say who it's from.
Please.
How does your guest recommend archiving a Hollywood encrypted DVD to protect against DVD rot?
Ah.
Is it necessary? Is it advisable? I have a side question. What is DVD rot?
Well, DVD rot is something that's happening to manufactured video DVDs. Again, it's all about manufacturing quality. And sometimes Hollywood production companies use a cut-rate outfit to make their stuff. So you'll buy the latest version of, let's say, The Lord of the Rings, you know, The Return of the King, and 3 to 5 years later you'll see that the product is actually delaminating, where the layers are actually coming apart, or there's oxidation between the layers destroying the dye.
But it's illegal to copy that disc, so what do you do?
Personally, with the exception of Disney, there's nothing you can't buy again.
Hmm.
I have a pretty extensive set of DVDs, and I watch some pretty eclectic stuff. And you know what? I can buy it again used. I can get it on eBay.
Okay, but let's say The Lord of the Rings produced all the last movie comes out, all the discs are out there and everything. 3 years' time, they start to fail. 10 years' time, 80% of them are failed. The company no longer is producing them because not enough people would buy them if they did produce it. And presto, you have a movie that you purchased that you don't have forever. I mean, that seems kind of problematic to me.
Yeah, it is possible. And there are softwares out there that will allow you to make backups of this media.
Okay.
The problem is that most of them are illegal. The Motion Picture Industry Association is not interested in your right of fair use,
uh-huh.
Even for that, because that right of fair use might be used for piracy.
Right.
And unfortunately, at this point, I have come to the conclusion after experimenting with such software, trying to back up some of my own DVDs with the same concerns, that the truth of the matter is that it takes more space, processing power, and time to do than it's worth.
Mm.
DVDs are worth $20 for a single disc,
mm-hmm.
at most. And the amount of time I spent trying to copy one and have it in a format where I didn't lose significant amounts of data in terms of picture quality,
mm-hmm.
or in terms of DVD extras, was very difficult.
Hmm. That's kind of discouraging.
This email has a couple more questions in it also.
All right. What does the hacker ask?
Actually, this is a good question. What backup software for Windows and what for Mac?
Backup software?
Mm-hmm. If you wanted, because like you were saying, the easier it is to back up your software, ideally if it was automatic, that would be the best. But what software would you recommend that's easy to use and works, you know, what for Windows and what for Mac?
Yeah, I mean, how do you take your, like, let's say your hard drive is going to fail in 3 days. I mean, it will fail eventually. So let's say it's going to fail in 3 days. What are you going to do right now to protect it so you can recover your entire data set?
Well, there are certain burning softwares if we're talking about using CD or DVD media. I personally use Narrow Burning ROM.
Narrow Burning ROM, that's the name of a company?
It's the name of the product. The name of the company is Ahead Software.
Ahead Software and Nero Burning?
Nero.
Oh, okay, good. I heard of that.
Good stuff. I use it, too.
Yeah, and it's great software, and it's relatively inexpensive.
Yeah, it's like $35, $40.
And do they have
$35
or
$40. You can buy it on the web.
Do they have a backup and complete restore thing? Or
they do. Now, the question about complete restore is whether we're talking about restore my data or restore my Windows build.
Uh-huh.
Those are two different things. When you're talking about restoring the operating system, that's called a bare metal restore. There's not a lot of consumer products that do that.
But in a lot of degrees, especially with a Windows operating system, you kind of want to be reinstalling them once in a while. So it makes sense to keep your installation disks and make sure you know where your data is, back up that data, and then when your drive does fail, you get a new drive, you install the new operating system, and then you move your data over. So you kind of keep them separate. Because why make a copy of the Windows application? You already have one. You have a CD of it.
Exactly. And there's another product out there that I have used to make full restorable images of systems that I've found to be very effective. It's a little bit more expensive. It's by Symantec. It's called V2i Protector Desktop.
Okay, what does that do?
V2i Protector will make an entire image of your disk.
Mm-hmm.
That is restorable. The only question is how big does that image get? If you make it bigger than a CD...
You got a problem.
Or a DVD, you've got a problem. And also, if you have a network in your house, you could save that image off to another machine. You could keep it there and then restore it using their disk. It's a handy product. It was something that I would recommend only for our intermediate to advanced users, though.
All right. From Aptos, Ark, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Morning. How you guys doing?
Quite well, thank you.
I got a question about the reusability of DVD RW media. I came into a DVD recorder for video stuff and was just kind of wondering, you know, it supports DVD-RW, and I was thinking about replacing my VCR in function with that, you know, so just leaving a DVD RW in there and recording whatever comes up when I want to watch a show, and I'm just wondering how often I'll be able to re-record over that particular kind of media.
Right now, manufacturers are telling us that DVD-RW media, be it plus or minus, has a rewritable life of about 100 cycles.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap. I mean, when it comes down to it, it's probably going to be cheaper than tape. And also the quality's going to be better. But do you have to erase the whole disk before you write on it again?
This particular machine supports a couple of different formats. It supports video format, which I guess is a more of a DVD standard, and then it has what it calls video R format, where you don't actually have to finalize it if you're not going to take it out of this machine.
Uh-huh.
And so, since if you don't have to finalize it, you can
re-record over that.
You can re-record over it without finalizing, and you can erase individual titles, as they call them, when you start to run out of space. So.
Well, Art, thanks for the call. Did you have another question?
No, that was it.
All right. Thank you very much for calling.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Did you want to add anything to that, Stephen?
No. I find it an unusual data as a machine that does that, although I understand that there are some in the market that will function as a time shifter or a PVR that uses RW media. I myself feel more comfortable for transitory things like that for using a hard disk, because if you lose a few TV shows, you're really not out of anything.
Now, speaking of hard disks, what's your recommendation on removable drives? It seems to be the fad these days.
Well, there's a couple of things out there. There's, of course, your what I call memory-based devices, which are your flash cards and your USB memory keys. I find those handy, especially for moving files between machines that may not be networked. Next thing would be things like USB hard disks externally. These, I find, are also good. I find they're also a nice place to do an intermediate backup before you move things to permanent media.
To kind of sort what you're going to be storing?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's a large portion of storage, so you can, if you're, let's say, you're a multi-computer household, maybe your wife or your son or daughter has a PC, you can move that device to their PC, get their data off of it, move to the next machine, get their data, and then move it back to your machine for burning off on CD or DVD.
I've got a question for you. Speaking of large hard drives, what do you recommend for a large storage? I mean, like if you've got like a couple hundred gigabytes worth of video that you've got for kids.
Removable hard drive, how safe is that?
You mean like those Bay devices?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, FireWire, USB.
Well, FireWire and USB are perfectly acceptable. The only problem with those devices is they're generally not more than one hard disk. The biggest hard disk we have in an affordable format right now is 250 gigs.
Right.
So if, let's say you have something along the lines of 500 gigs or a terabyte of data, what I recommend you do is set up a RAID array. It's relatively inexpensive to do. You can get yourself 750 gigs of usable data with four 250 meg drives and set it up on a separate system and connect it via your home network.
You're talking to RAID 4 array?
RAID 5.
Oh, RAID 5. So if one of the drives goes down, you're still okay.
You're still good.
Now, isn't that kind of an advanced solution? And wouldn't it be kind of expensive?
It would be, but I guess if you're talking about having to keep more than 250 gigs of data, essentially, if you're a person who needs to do that and you've gotten past the point where that 250 gigs is going to do it for you, you've really pushed yourself into this realm.
Makes a lot of sense. And a lot of motherboards, especially enthusiast motherboards, come with RAID support.
They'll come with RAID 0 and RAID 1, which is mirroring and or striping.
And would this be what you recommend for like a digital photographer, or a photographer that's doing a lot of digital photography? Does that make like a lot of sense for you, for that person?
Yeah, actually it does. I mean, the thing about digital photographers, and unfortunately there's not a good solution for those guys yet, is that people expect that when they have their high school photographs taken, that photographer is going to have his negatives forever.
Right.
And as those guys are converting over to digital, they're finding themselves very much out in the wilderness because, frankly, a lot of the photographers are just going into digital. They're not terribly computer savvy, and they don't know what to do.
Right, and so now after 4 months, they've taken, 15 weddings or something ridiculous like that, and they've got almost a terabyte of images to deal with, and they've got to store that for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, and not only do they have to store it, they have to catalog it, which is even worse.
Right.
So those guys have some serious, serious data backup issues that unfortunately I don't have a good solution for.
Okay, but for the average home user, as a summary of today's show, you recommend getting a DVD burner and maybe even waiting if you can for dual density so you have larger storage.
Yeah.
You could use rewritable technology, DVDs, because that way if you're making a backup every year or something, you can reuse it, but not necessarily just use a... Do you like the once burn or multiple burn kind of DVDs?
Well, let's put it this way. If it's going to be a permanent archive, I fill the DVD up. I do them on once burn.
Okay.
And then I do my intermediates on multi-burn.
And you make two copies, or do you make more than two copies?
At least two copies.
And then you put them in different places. Take one to work, leave one at home.
Absolutely.
And you catalog them. That's an issue too, right?
Yep. You have to make sure that you've got a good list of what is where. And I believe there are a number of freeware software out there that do that. Or you could kind of go the hard route like I have and use an Excel file.
And that was a question from Steve, one of our listeners to the show, wanted to know what software you recommend for finding something you've stored on DVD.
Let's do a little research on that, Steve. If you could help us, we'll then publish that on GeekSpeak on today's show date. That would be very useful to everybody.
Absolutely.
This is GeekSpeak. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. Our guest today, Stephen Sugart, Jr., works for Current Analysis as a senior analyst of enterprise infrastructure, where he is responsible for analysis of Ethernet switching and, of course, storage networking. The geeks today were Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. Stephen, thank you very much for being on GeekSpeak today.
Thank you, Lyle.
You can learn a little bit more about Stephen Sugart, Jr. By his article that's linked from GeekSpeak's website. Great little article on how to do storage for long term and what to think about for business, which triggered this entire show. Miles, Sean, John, thanks again, of course, for being on GeekSpeak with me.
It's always a great way to spend a Friday morning.
Yep. Yay. Happy 4th of July, everybody.
Our producer is Maggie Cleveland, who also answers the phone. Maggie, thank you very much for making GeekSpeak work. And to all of you that called in, that's Ark and Dwayne, thank you very much for calling in and making GeekSpeak what it is. Without your input, it would just be us geeking out. And, who wants to listen to that? Coming up next, Rick Kleffel talks with Tom Perotta about Fobles of Fiction, Suburbia and Fiction About Suburbia. That's Fine Print, coming up in just a few minutes here on Geek Speak. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KDBH San Auto, or online at kusp.org. Next week on Geek Speak, protecting the privacy of your email with PGP, Pretty Good Privacy. That's 10 a.m. on Friday here on KUSP. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.